Blog Talk Radio.
Art Bell has gone to bed. Rush Limbaugh won't be awake for hours. You have arrived at the Commute Faster Energy Hour. Energy. There comes a time when all good men come to realize that that disturbing hacking cough is not caused from years of smoking because they never smoked a day in their life. No, we can thank big oil, coal, and nuclear waste for polluting the air we breathe and the water we drink. But now, bringing solutions to the monopoly-caused energy crisis, and coming to you from his remote location in exile, deep in a salt mine just outside Death Valley, kind of living out my own near-death experience, I'm your energy expert and host, Ken Rasmussen, occasionally called Late Night Leroy. Well, greetings, energy fans. Today is July 10, 2007. And this coincidentally happens to be, I think, it's Nikola Tesla's 151st birthday. And I don't think anything could be more timely and appropriate on the birthday of somebody who made so many advances for us in electricity and electrical applications than to take up the topic of electric cars. Now, I've got to confess something to my audience here. And my opener calls me the energy expert. I've learned some things on some things about alternative energy, but I have to be honest here. Electric cars really snuck up on me. And what happened was, anybody's read my blog, it was a few weeks ago I did a report on a grand opening of an electric car dealer down in Glendale, California, which I attended, and I have a lot of pictures posted there from the event. But I met a gentleman by the name of Bill Williams from the Zen Motor Car Company, clever name, Z-E-N-N, stands for Zero Emission, No Noise. And I heard Bill give a short talk on what's been happening with electric cars, and I was just flabbergasted. They really snuck up on me with advanced technologies, and they're no longer just glorified golf carts. There is a future to them. So my guest today is the CEO of Zen Motor Company, based up in Toronto, Canada, and his name is Ian Clifford. So, Ian, I want to welcome you to the program.
Thanks very much, Ken. It's great to be here.
Yeah, well, as you heard my opener, I have to confess to a lot of ignorance on just what has been occurring here with electric cars. They're suddenly becoming quite viable. And I was very impressed with a gentleman from your firm that gave a small lecture there at the grand opening. And we want you to bring all my guests up to speed on just how viable electric cars are becoming these days. So let me open up by asking you how you got affiliated with Zen and just what direction Zen Motor Company is going to be taking their product line.
Well, interestingly, I'm the co-founder of the company. So Zen Motor Company, which started its life actually as Feel Good Cars. That was our official company name when we first started, and we recently changed over to Zen Motor Company. Zen, by the way, stands for Zero Emission, No Noise. So it's spelled Z-E-N-N, so your listeners know that. Really, it came, you know, I was at the time incredibly frustrated that you could not buy an electric car from a major automotive manufacturer. They were available in California on pilot project basis, but you know, the average consumer just couldn't get their hands on an electric car. So there was that frustration, number one. And number two was, in Toronto, as in many major cities and pretty well all major cities around the world now, air quality has just been declining so rapidly over the last decade, and a huge percentage of the degradation of the air quality in our cities is due to transportation and predominantly automobiles. And I was, you know, kind of sick and tired of adding to this problem, and said, you know, electric cars, there's got to be a better way to move around our cities. And so I started a car company, which was kind of a bold move, but at the same time, realizing that the major automakers were not serious about these issues, and it was going to take small, nimble, upstart companies to really make a change. As you said in your intro, I mean, there's been a tremendous amount of activity in the last few years in this space, and it's just going to continue to grow dramatically in the coming years, and certainly I can talk about that.
Well, that had to be a monumental decision on your part to say, hey, here's a need, let's fill it. But the need happens to be something that is just entrenched with government regulations on starting a car company.
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting point. And one thing we've learned over the last 18 months is that it doesn't matter if you're a tiny car company or a big car company. The regulations are onerous, and we've made a huge investment in infrastructure so that we comply to federal standards, so that we can sell our vehicles throughout the United States, and that's right. A big job, and it's amazing how difficult it is made for companies to enter that space, and I don't think that's necessarily an accident. Just given the dominance of several companies in the automotive world, but electric vehicles are different. Our initial product, which you would have seen in Glendale, is a low speed electric vehicle. So it's designed for urban core and neighborhood type driving. So it has a federally regulated top speed of 25 miles an hour, and can operate on a 35 mile an hour road. So it is truly an inner city urban core neighborhood commuter vehicle, if you will. And in California, where there are many thousands of these vehicles on the road, they are used. They offset. It's well over 70% of these short daily trips that commuters make. So if you're driving, dropping your kids at the store, or you're doing a short commute to work, that sort of thing, where people were typically using internal combustion engine vehicles, they're now using these low-speed electric vehicles, which are very, very practical for that purpose.
Now, again, I need to be educated. Do low-speed vehicles like that require a special license plate?
It depends.
In most states?
They're regulated state by state, but for the most part, they license as a regular vehicle, and they insure like a regular vehicle. You need a driver's license to drive them. The insurance is generally a lot less than it would be for a full-size vehicle, because they are slower and, because of that, are safer. They're driving in much safer driving environments. But they license like a regular car. And if you go to our website and take a look at our vehicle, ours is a fully enclosed automotive vehicle. We've got, and we're just introducing an air conditioning option for it. So it has all the creature comforts of a regular car, but it is silent. It is pure zero emission vehicle. It's a plug-in vehicle. You plug it in at night and drive it during the day predominantly, and costs about around 2 cents a mile to operate. So we're talking about fractional cost, and most importantly, it is a green product. I mean, it is truly a zero emission product. So you're sitting in traffic most of the time in urban driving, and this car isn't using any energy when it's sitting still, obviously. So
now, as new as electric cars are, I'm not sure how relevant this question is, but how well do they hold their Blue Book value?
Their Blue Book value? Well, that's an interesting question. We're early into the market, so we've just started delivering cars in the last few months. So we don't have enough history to know, but traditionally, electric cars go back well over 100 years. At the turn of the last century, in the early 1900s, we had, in New York City, there were more electric vehicles than there were internal combustion vehicles. The technology is so well proven, and I mean, you talk about Tesla in your intro, and that's very timely. I mean, the technology to drive an electric car is so well proven. The big issue, and I would argue the Achilles heel of the electric car industry for the past century, has been energy storage. So that's basically the battery that stores the energy. The technology hadn't changed a lot in 100 years and has changed significantly in the last 5 years, but with batteries like lithium-ion batteries and nickel-metal hydride batteries, these are chemical batteries, which are very, very expensive to manufacture and you know, have some inherent safety issues that are not insignificant. But there's a horse race going on right now to develop a new type of energy storage device, and there's some really, really exciting stuff going on. We're working with a company in Texas, actually based in Austin, a group called eStore, which is kind of an awkward name. It's eStore, who are developing a solid-state battery, which basically means it's not a chemical-based battery. It's extremely lightweight, very, very high power densities, can recharge in minutes instead of hours, is a true breakthrough technology. And it's really where we've got to be, I think, for mass adoption of electric vehicles. You need you need a new battery, and that technology should be commercialized within the next year, and I think we'll see a massive change at that point. So we're really, really excited about where things are heading.
Now, at that grand opening, Bill at the end was holding a Q&A and got into this very topic on storage and the subject of what's down the road, what's coming up in the future, and a new term came to me that I had never heard before. And when I passed this term toward one of my electronic experts, he said, well, yeah, the government's been using it since the 90s, but it's been declassified recently, and it looks like it's going to be out in the consumer market. And that was a topic called the ultracapacitor.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that the item that you're talking about as far as a solid-state battery?
Yeah, it's a more capacitor technology than it is chemical battery technology. So, yeah, right. It's... to suggest that it's been declassified, capacitors have been around for a long, long time. I mean, we're talking, mm-hmm. In fact, centuries before battery technology, there was capacitor technology. Mm-hmm. What's happened recently is new materials and processing to develop energy densities and power densities that we've never seen before. So, the best analogy, if you will, if you think of hard drive technology, like computer hard drives, 5 years ago, 1 gigabyte hard drive was this 20-pound thing that sat on your desk and sounded like an aircraft starting up and cost thousands and thousands of dollars, right? And today, you've got a 4 gigabyte storage device the size of your baby fingernail that fits in your phone and costs $79.95 at Circuit City. There have been such huge advancements in storage technology, and that applies specifically to what eStore is doing with their technology. So we're going to see, I believe, we're going to see such a shift away from petroleum as the primary fuel to move our vehicles to electricity as the primary fuel. And electricity is just a much, much better way of moving cars down the road. I mean, electric motors, electric drive systems, they operate at, 80 or 90% efficiency. They're incredibly efficient utilizers of energy. An internal combustion engine, you're lucky to get 15% efficiency. That's 15% efficiency at the wheels. Because you burn petroleum, most of it turns into heat. The rest of it is friction, and an incredibly primitive way, given electric drive technology and how it's advanced. So we're very, very optimistic that we're going to see some really, really exciting stuff happen in the next year or so.
One area that that I've emphasized on my website is hydrogen production. That the current method of generating hydrogen is primarily comes from natural gas in a process they call steam reformation.
Yeah.
Terribly inefficient, and it makes hydrogen quite expensive, and it's also polluting. You've got leftover carbon byproducts after you extract the hydrogen from the natural gas. Then now you've got other junk to get rid of.
Yeah.
Ultra-efficient electrolysis is absolutely the way to go on that, and there are developments being made on it. Applying this to a to an electric car, though, for the drive mechanism, have you looked into tell us what are the current efficiencies if someone had an efficient way to create hydrogen on demand and then utilize a fuel cell to make the electricity to drive your car, how efficient are those numbers at this point?
You know, I don't want to quote detailed studies, but the problem with a fuel cell powered vehicle is you've touched on it, is how is the hydrogen created, how is the hydrogen stored, how is the hydrogen transported? I mean, there's some very big infrastructure questions there. The second issue is the efficiency, and I would say the fragility of a fuel cell. It's a pretty sophisticated device that, you know, if you're pounding down a dirt road in the country, an average fuel cell is not going to, it's not going to take it kindly to being in a, in a pretty brutal operating environment. My understanding has always been that fuel cell technology is most applicable to stationary electrical generation, where it's being used to either feed the grid or it's being used to charge a battery or something like that, or as backup power. You know, I think we've seen companies like Ballard Systems and a number of other hydrogen fuel cell companies try to commercialize fuel cells in cars for the past 15 years, and it's just an incredibly expensive way of creating electricity. And the efficiencies aren't great. I mean, they're better than internal combustion for sure, but, you're talking sort of 30-40% efficiencies as distinct from a 80-90% efficiency in a pure electric drive using a battery. So I don't know. I mean, back to this issue of electricity as a primary fuel, you know, the infrastructure exists. We've all got plugs in our homes where we can plug in our cars, and there is a pretty well a global network now for electricity distribution. It's not nearly as efficient as it can be, and that will change. And eStore actually plays a hugely significant role in the efficiency of electrical generation and distribution. One of the reasons our electrical grid is so inefficient now is that there's no way of storing electricity throughout the grid. And that's especially relevant when you look at renewable energy. So you look at windmills and solar and all these incredible ways of generating electricity that are basically free. I mean, the hardware costs money, but, we don't pay anything for the sun to shine, and we don't pay anything for the wind to blow. That's all energy that really belongs to all of us. I mean, that's globally, those are resources that are renewable, that are ours. But the big problem has been that you can't store that energy. eStore enables, their biggest market in the world will be renewables and grid load leveling. I mean, these are huge, huge storage applications that are very, very exciting. And I'll just tell you a little, once again, I like using analogies to kind of explain these things because it's easy for a person to kind of visualize it. But if you imagine, imagine a supertanker now, today, which is full of, millions of barrels of oil and crashes off the coast of Alaska and kills a trillion birds and destroys the environment. Imagine that kind of a craft full of batteries. So it's full of this solid-state battery technology. And instead of, going to the Middle East and picking up oil, this craft goes out to sea, and it's covered in windmills, vertical axis windmills, and it's covered in solar panels, and it has, tidal current generators under it, and it basically kind of situates itself out at sea in this optimal environment for generating electricity through various means. And basically it fills up this battery that's internal to the super tanker. And it brings once it's all charged up, it heads back to port and basically dumps all of its energy into a similar size battery on shore. And we're talking huge amounts of energy here. And then it goes back out to sea and does the same thing over and over again. And you've got, you know, pure renewable way of generating electricity and feeding the grid. And it's interesting, one analyst who looks at our company quite seriously, he kind of coined this phrase, liquid electricity. And really that's what it is. So electricity suddenly becomes this energy source that you can move. You can store it, you can move it, you can generate it in the best environments in the world. And it is clean, absolutely clean. And at the renewable level, it's 100% clean. We're talking like a pure green fuel. It's kind of energy independence, if you will. It'll be a game changer, and it's got to happen. You know, I travel all over the world, and every city I am in now, regardless of where I am, we're reaching epic disaster proportions in terms of air quality, and it used to be that the scientists were saying about one third of greenhouse gas emissions were due to transportation, but recently they've determined now it's two thirds, and the biggest difference you can make as an individual is basically the vehicle that you drive. I mean, that's our biggest carbon footprint for the most part. And if you can drive a green vehicle, zero emission vehicle, you're making a huge difference.
One area I have to agree with you on is the fuel cell issue. And I found that as a major disappointment because about a year ago I was working with some fellows who had a clever new process for generating hydrogen rather economically.
Yeah.
And we were setting forward to trying to design a sample installation of powering a home from this cheap hydrogen. And I thought, well, the most logical thing is let's go out and buy a fuel cell. And I started shopping, and I gave out the criteria that I need a fuel cell that'll handle an average home, and we need 30 kW of current capacity.
Yeah.
And we need to be able to deliver 110 volts AC. And I started shopping around the world and found that no such thing existed other than somebody would build a prototype for me for about $1 million.
Yeah.
And I was in shock. And the more I read on fuel cells, they're horribly inefficient. And I don't know how they got so popular in the media that for, oh, goodness, the last couple of years, that seems to be the magic word. Oh, if it's a fuel cell, wow, you're new and green and clean and everything, but nobody wanted to look at the actual details. They're still grossly inefficient.
Yes.
And you brought up something that I hadn't encountered, and that's you say they're actually delicate, too, and really can't handle the rigors of driving down a bumpy road then, too, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I know there's, I mean, they've been doing a tremendous amount of testing over the last number of years, and that's been one of the issues that's come back. But the other thing, too, is that, you know, the manufacturing of fuel cells, for the most part, involves noble metals. So platinum is a very significant component in fuel cells.
Yeah,
there is not a lot of platinum on this planet. And,
right.
You know, you talk about mass introduction of these technologies, you've got to think, you know, where are the raw materials going to come from to commercialize this stuff, right?
Right.
The same issue exists in battery technology. You know, there's been a tremendous amount of focus on lithium ion battery technology in the last year or so, and we're talking large format lithium ion for vehicles specifically, and there are not huge reserves of lithium around the planet, and in fact the largest reserves are in some of the most unstable places in the world, and so that's a big issue. And that was something that, you know, when we were looking at energy storage technology specifically, that was one thing that I certainly was very much focused on, was if there's going to be mass adoption of electric vehicles and an energy storage technology is going to enable that, we've got to make sure that the energy storage technology can also scale with the mass acceptance and adoption of electric vehicles. And And it turns out that, you know, eStore uses barium as their primary component, and there are massive global reserves of barium. And so there's an ability for them to really, you know, build the infrastructure, build enough energy storage for, you know, all the vehicles on the planet if you want, and also support the electric system that will power that. So so it's a very, very big picture view we've tried to take in looking at, you know, what are the answers going to be, what's the future going to look like. And so, you know, once again, I mean, we're very, very, very compelled by what's happening and recognize the necessity for this kind of change. It's just, it's absolutely an imperative at this point.
Well, this ultra-capacitor solid-state battery, that really intrigues me. Can you go into some details on that? Like what kind of raw materials, raw resources does it need? What elements are necessary to make those things work?
Well, what I mentioned, what I just mentioned was barium or barium titanate, which is the really the key raw material that goes into their storage device.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah, U.S. Geological Survey. I mean, there's 200 million tons of the source barium in all over the world. So it's interesting because its primary use was the coating of cathode ray tubes, so basically television screens. And interestingly, you know, in the last few years, everything is moving to sort of LCD and plasma. So there's a huge, there's actually huge reserves of this material around the world. I mean, there's enough to power every single automobile on this planet with electric in terms of their ability to manufacture storage devices, and in turn, the ability to support an electric infrastructure that can power every vehicle on the planet. So the scalability of what they're doing is there, and that's really, really important to consider.
Well, now this leads to the next step question of manufacturing logistics. How long does it take to take a good idea of this barium based power storage and turn it into a product that you can park in your driveway?
Yeah,
what's the time factor on that?
That's a very good question, and interestingly, eStore started developing this technology about a dozen years ago. And
wow.
I'll go back to my analogy with hard disk technology. 10 years ago, it was too expensive. The manufacturing processes to create this kind of device were just prohibitive. So eStore, you know, kept developing the technology, waiting for a time when they could commercialize it inexpensively, because that's the key. You've got to have an energy storage device that doesn't increase the cost of a vehicle by orders of magnitude. It's got to be in line with internal combustion, or the average consumers can't consider it. So they have been, you know, over the last 18 months, have been building out production capacity. And they, in January of this year, they issued a press release indicating that they would have production units for us, by the end of 2007. We're certainly, you know, hoping that they will, but they may slip. We don't know. But that's why I'm saying it's so imminent, the possibility for this. And, you know, from our perspective, if we have one of our vehicles running on this technology in 2008, that would be a tremendous, tremendous success. I mean, you imagine a car that, an electric car that, you know, you basically recharge it in 2 minutes. You drive it 200 or 300 miles, you recharge it again in 2 minutes, and you turn around and drive back. I mean, at that point, you know, the whole game changes. It's that you can no longer deny the viability of it, and that's what we're hoping. That's what we're hoping the picture is going to look like in the next 12 months. So game changing, absolutely game changing.
Now, clarify for me the Zen car that's on the front page of your website. Is that limited to the 25 mile an hour speed, or is that a freeway vehicle?
That's a low speed vehicle.
That is a low speed. Okay.
Yeah. So that is, as I mentioned, designed for inner city and urban core neighborhood type driving. Yeah. So
okay.
That's where we started.
Does Zen have any freeway speed vehicles?
Not currently, but you know, one of the reasons is because energy storage technology isn't there to support a freeway capable vehicle at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to put enough chemical batteries in a vehicle and have it run a useful freeway distance and not cost, you know, five times what the basic car would cost because the batteries are so expensive, we're just not there yet. So our freeway capable vehicle program, you know, will coincide very much with the delivery of eStore technology to us, and we are certainly already in the planning stages of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but right now our car, you know, it uses an advanced lead acid battery, that is, you know, it's a very safe battery. It's a zero maintenance battery. It's a very low cost battery. And the car has a range of, you know, sort of 35 to 40 miles, which for a low-speed vehicle is you know, meets the needs of many, many, you know, like a vast majority of drivers around the United States. They just, our challenge is just to educate consumers so that they understand that, you know, they can use an electric vehicle for a lot of their driving. They just can't use the same vehicle for their local driving that they would use to drive across the country. So there is a definite, you know, an educational component to the process of selling electric vehicles. Absolutely.
Yeah, but anybody who lives in an urban environment knows that this is the ideal range capacity and economy for handling a city environment.
Yeah,
it's just ridiculous firing up the family V8 station wagon or SUV or whatever to just run down to the grocery store and back.
Oh, and it's grossly inefficient. I mean, this is the other thing, too. You know, you talk about 15% efficiency in an internal combustion engine. That's in the optimal operating environment. But, you know, when you start a fire up a V8 or a V6 and it's stone cold, you know, the amount of emissions that come out of the tailpipe and the lack of efficiency, I mean, just it increases so dramatically. So for these short trips, which so many of us do on a regular basis, you know, and this is just scooting down to the corner, visiting friends, dropping the kids off, whatever it is, or short commutes, which many, many people do, it's the worst way of using an internal combustion engine. And it is perfect for an electric car. It is the way, it's what electric cars are designed for. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, they run at pure efficiency from point, you know, as soon as you start it up and start moving the vehicle, it's running at pure efficiency. So it just makes so much sense.
Do you have anything on the drawing board to handle the other poor person who lives 35 miles away from the city and has to drive a 70-mile round trip just to get back and forth to work each day?
Absolutely.
Down in Los Angeles, those people are abundant.
Oh, no, without question. And ironically, they probably all travel about 15 miles per hour on the freeways, too. So they could even use a low-speed vehicle. There's a bit of irony there. But a fully capable highway vehicle, as I said, would be brought on stream in relation with the eStore. But one thing I will add, which is very interesting, we haven't talked about, is we also have the rights to the eStore technology for the conversion of internal combustion vehicles. So this is, if you take any internal combustion vehicle that's on the road today, and there are over somewhere between 750 and 900 million passenger vehicles on the road today around the world. I mean, it is such an extraordinary number. We have the rights then to eStore technology to convert those vehicles from internal combustion to electric. So you could take your, you know, this is hypothetical, but you could take your 5-year-old Honda Civic and you could, utilizing a kit that Zen Motor Company would develop, you could have that vehicle converted from internal combustion to electric, say, and not only does it give the vehicle a new lease on life, but it would also, you know, reduce the operating costs dramatically, and you'd have a green vehicle. I was talking about this recently at a conference, and we have, globally, there's such a huge investment of energy and raw materials in these hundreds of millions of vehicles around the planet. We owe it to ourselves and we owe it to the environment to really repurpose those vehicles as electric vehicles. We think that there's a tremendous, once again, imperative, but also tremendous opportunity for that type of a program.
Now you've made a reference to eStore. Now is that an affiliate or a branch of your company or
well, eStore, they're an independent company. They're a privately owned company. They're based in Austin, Texas. Their primary investor actually is a group called Kleiner Perkins out of California, who, you know, amongst other things, you know, invested startup investment for Google and Amazon, and they're a very, very successful investment firm. We met eStore way back sort of in 2002, and I was out looking specifically for the most advanced energy storage technology, and they were looking for a partner to license their technology to. So we met each other at a very, very good time, eStore and Zen Motor Company, and were able to strike an agreement that was beneficial to both companies. And and actually, just a couple of months ago, we became an equity investor in their company as well. So we have a really, really strong relationship with them, and we, you know, truly see that technology as the future, and it'll be the paradigm shift from away from petroleum as a primary fuel, and as I said, electricity should be our primary fuel. It's just it's just a much more practical, much more efficient energy medium than fossil fuel.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I dare bring up some other electric car companies that have had some announcements recently that were quite startling. Let's look at the first one that I heard about, Tesla Motor Car Company. Mm-hmm. Now, they seem to have bet the family farm on lithium batteries.
Go ahead. Sorry.
You think that was just a poorly timed executive decision that they made the decision like 2 months before the ultra capacitor came online, or is it likely that they'll probably be going over to the ultra capacitor themselves?
Well, it's interesting. The other electric car manufacturers, and there's only a couple of them on the planet, counting us amongst them. Have basically been forced into using lithium technology because it exists and it's being commercialized. It's incredibly expensive. In the case of Tesla, they basically have a $100,000 electric sports car, with probably a $50,000 or $60,000 battery. It kind of puts it in perspective, you know, the cost of chemical battery technology, the most advanced chemical battery technology is huge. Similar amount of energy storage in an e-source type device would, you know, be a tenth that cost. So, and a much smaller battery, which is very, very important, for all sorts of reasons, safety being one, but also, you know, successfully being able to crash test a vehicle, you need a much lighter battery source. And there's a whole bunch of other reasons. But Tesla faces the classic challenge, and that's the challenge that has faced the electric car industry for the last century, is how do you store enough energy in an electric car platform to make it practical to the average consumer? And that's where you need breakthrough energy storage. And that's why, as I said, that's why we were courted by eStore, and why we developed the relationship that we did, realizing that, you know, to be the leader in this space, you have to have the leading energy storage technology. So, we've been able to, because we started our relationship early with them. With eStore, we do have exclusive rights to their technology up to a vehicle that's about 3,000 pound curb weight. So to put that in context, that's a Honda Accord, Toyota Prius size vehicle, and it's which represents probably about 40 million new cars a year around the world. So it's a huge potential market for us. and we'll see. I mean, we'll see once it's commercialized. We believe there'll be a dramatic groundswell towards electric vehicles. There'll be none of the stumbling blocks will be there anymore. The average consumer won't know the difference between driving internal combustion or electric, and all the benefits of electric can really shine through at that point.
And the only other two electric car companies that I know about would be Zapp, based out of California, and Lightning car company in based out of the UK. And each of those their recent press releases have just shown outrageous horsepower and a startlingly short recharge time. Do you happen to know if these companies are using the same eStore technology you're talking about?
I'm pretty sure they're not. I know they're not using eStore, absolutely not, because we, as I said, we have exclusive rights to that technology, so they would not be using that. I believe they're using lithium-ion technologies, and having read the same press releases that you have not. We've never seen a commercial product demonstrated at this point, so I really can't comment on the viability of what's being proposed. The horsepowers being thrown around are not that startling, in that electric motors are incredibly powerful, and you can have a very small electric motor with a tremendous amount of torque. I mean, the cars we sell now, you know, basically it's a 5.5 horsepower electric motor, but it accelerates this 1,200-pound car, you know, in the blink of an eye up to its maximum speed of 25 miles an hour. I mean, so, you know, to have a 600 horsepower electric car is not, that's not rocket science. That's merely, you know, very, very efficient electric motors which exist. The energy storage side of the equation is, I would suggest, with Lightning and with Zapp or with any of the current electric car companies, is the big question mark. I mean, we're not at the point where these large format lithium ion batteries, for instance, have been proven in a mass production commercialized sense. Certainly for cell phones and power tools and those sorts of things, absolutely, there's no issue there. But you get into a very, very large capacity battery for an electric car, you're dealing with a totally different animal at that point, and there are issues and problems inherent with a very, very large chemical battery.
Yeah, and lithium has the cloud of the Sony computer disaster hanging over its head too. So
that's no joke. Big issue with a chemical battery. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine that in a collision, right? I mean, you've suddenly got dozens of kilowatt hours of energy stored in a chemical battery. And chemical batteries, traditionally, they do not like to discharge rather rapidly, you know. So you get into a catastrophic collision situation with a chemical battery, you have some very, very serious issues to overcome in that regard. The nice thing about eStore and a solid-state battery is that it can ground instantly. It's an electronic device, so it has the ability to discharge or recharge at electronic speeds, whereas chemical batteries inherently do not have that ability. So that was, you know, why we were very compelled by what eStore is doing, because of the safety factor, and that was very, very important to us as a car manufacturer. Absolutely.
Well, now safety, that brings up another issue I hadn't even thought about. I just remembered there was a short news blurb about here in California of local fire departments commenting that when they have to go out and deal with the rescue of a contemporary hybrid car, that they were personally afraid of what a regular hybrid, and we're talking like a Prius or a Honda, of the potential electrical discharge there. So you're saying this new eStore method is even safer than the current type of electrical storage used in hybrids?
Well, the thing about eStore is it has the ability to ground instantly. So in the event of a catastrophic collision, basically the entire battery just fuses and discharges instantly. So there's no residual energy danger, whereas hybrid technologies with lithium ion batteries, you've got a few hundred volts of electricity there, which is very hard to get rid of very, very quickly. So it's a different animal for sure. I mean, there's been a tremendous amount of training in rescue personnel over the last couple of years because, there are a couple hundred thousand hybrids on the road in North America, so they have to be trained to deal with them. But I have a good friend who's a fire captain, and they're still very wary when they go to a collision site with a hybrid. They're still very nervous about it. So.
Yeah, and sorry to say, hybrids are not necessarily the best of both worlds, because in the event of a catastrophic accident, you've now got a high-powered battery present along and the potential of a spark, along with the presence of a gasoline tank.
Yes.
And who knows what angle you're going to get hit. In the reality of life, you don't have a clue what angle you're ever going to get hit from.
Exactly.
I mean, there are higher percentages than others, but in a real-life accident, you don't know what angle you're going to get hit from, and that car could get shredded from any direction imaginable.
Of course.
And, if you've now got both a battery and a gasoline tank present, that is a potential problem.
Yeah. Which is why, we're a pure zero emission company. We think that electricity is the core, the core fuel, if you will, and there's no need for internal combustion components. A hybrid vehicle is a very, very complex vehicle. An electric vehicle is a very, very simple vehicle. So from a servicing perspective, electric cars are so much simpler than any internal combustion vehicle. And interesting, if you did see Who Killed the Electric Car, which is a great film and really really worth picking up and taking a look. And we've got a little cameo at the end of it. But a big part of the automakers' reason for getting rid of the electric cars, in this case General Motors, was that there is very, very little servicing in the vehicles. There's no oil changes, there's no tune-ups, there's no filters or mufflers to replace or anything like that. So a big part of the revenue infrastructure that's built into the current automotive industry is eliminated by electric cars. So just food for thought. I mean, there's a huge industry built around servicing internal combustion vehicles, and electric vehicles just don't require it. I mean, the little motor in our car is rated for 10,000 hours before you even look at it, and that's an awful lot of driving. So.
Well, that raises a point of a comment I saw on an alternative energy chat board, and I got to share this with you because it's really a paradigm shift in reasoning from what I've seen with any car coming out of Detroit for the last 30 years. And that's when this gentleman was reading, and let's see, it was tied specifically to the press release from Zapp, and they were boasting 300, over 300 mile range and a 10 minute recharge. And this gentleman, after reading that, said, if they can deliver a product like that, that is the kind of car I would like to keep in my family for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a comment I don't hear from most anybody buying anything from Detroit or Japan.
Yeah.
Because of carbon buildup from gasoline or diesel, whichever direction you go, things wear out, and the first time the problem shows up in the car, hey, it's time to change it. Let me get a new bell and whistle here.
Yep.
And we all use the first breakdown as the excuse for buying another car.
I know, it's remarkable.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. And gasoline cars, especially, they're going to wear out. You got to keep the oil changed, you got to keep the filters changed, and whatever. And you have a strong point there that stuff is gone with electrics.
Yeah, you're still gonna, you're gonna wear out brake pads and bearings, and you're gonna have to change your tires. And mind you, there's low rolling resistance tires now for designed specifically for electric vehicles that just last way, way longer than the rubber compounds on our regular tires. But
yeah.
I mean, this is part of the industry changing. But
well, even brake pads, because aren't most cars using regenerative braking?
Absolutely. So you're right. You're right. You will ultimately wear out your brake pads, but the chances are they will last considerably longer because you're using regenerative braking. And
right.
But this idea of a car lasting a lot longer, I mean, cars should last, electric cars should last virtually indefinitely. I mean, especially if you have an energy storage device that doesn't wear out, you know, lithium-ion batteries, you know, they're going to wear out eventually and they're going to cost a lot of money to replace. And then there's the whole question of, is there enough lithium in the world to satisfy even a small percentage of the number of vehicles on the road? But the reality is very much that electric vehicles do last and will last considerably longer. And then, you know, back to the point of converting existing internal combustion vehicles. I mean, you may, at 5 years, you may have a perfectly sound body on your vehicle, but as you say, your internal combustion components have started to wear out, right? So you're replacing mufflers, you're replacing valves and piston rings and, you know, all of these things that are built into an internal combustion engine. And like suddenly, hey, no, I want this, I love this car. I want it to be an electric car and I want it for another 10 years. And why not? You know, why not?
Exactly.
It makes so much sense.
And as I've mentioned repeatedly on my website and here on the talk show, is my website does specialize in the more bizarre methods of creating energy. Mm-hmm. But electric is forward compatible. You can get your electricity from any direction you want.
Yeah.
Well, I see we've got about 5 minutes left here on the show, and one area I'd like to go into is speculating on future technologies. What is maybe 5 years down the road, hopefully sooner? We've already discussed storage method, and that is a key factor.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the idea of possibly recharging the vehicle as you go along the road? Now, solar has been everybody's first guess. Okay, put solar panels on your roof, but your roof, unfortunately, isn't big enough.
Mm-hmm.
I have three here. We already discussed hydrogen fuel cells and their drawback.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gentleman by the name of Robin Mark that I don't know who produced his little home video. It has a date stamp on it in 1997, but it just mm-hmm. got posted on the Internet in the last year. And this gentleman, using apparently Tesla technology, found out how to tune into the electromagnetic resonance of the Earth core. And he's got this 3-foot diameter donut that just sits there, no moving parts, and puts out 3,000 watts of power.
Fascinating.
Has your firm looked into that? I mean, if you could mount a device like that on board, then your battery system is perpetually being recharged.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be no overnight, no 10-minute waits or whatever. It's just mm-hmm. bathroom stops. You have to stop the car.
Exactly. It's an absolutely fascinating area of discussion. And we on a weekly basis get emails from inventors talking about sort of the perpetual motion machine.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain laws of physics that are undeniable and certainly perpetual motion is kind of one of them, unless you're operating in a vacuum, but certainly incredibly innovative ways of generating electricity, I think there we will see leaps and bounds in that arena over the next number of years. Solar, I mean, you raise solar, there's a couple of companies and some research happening in Canada right now for photovoltaic emulsions. So suddenly you'd have, instead of big clumsy solar panels on your roof, the entire vehicle would be painted in a photovoltaic emulsion. And that, while it won't give you all of your motive power, it'll certainly supplement, right? So that's one area of great interest to us. I really believe that wind and solar and generating electricity on our own. So, you know, to have a house covered in solar panels that are now affordable, that will become affordable, and to have vertical access windmills throughout our cities, there are just all these phenomenal ways of generating electricity. And if you can store it, and you can store it in your home or in your office building or what have you, and utilize it when you need it, that's, I think, will go a long way to the kind of energy independence that we desperately need. Perpetual motion, I don't know about. It'd be nice.
Yeah, well...
You know, nuclear fission, that'd be nice, but I don't know. You know, it's. I can't even speculate, obviously, but...
Well, I've had the rare opportunity of working behind the scenes in Lockheed Skunk Works and seeing some of the really advanced stuff that only the military knows about. And
yep.
Now I haven't been at Lockheed for 15 years, so I know what was advanced at that point, and I can only speculate what they've got going now.
Exactly.
As these new technologies come out, there's laws of physics. There's also laws of Murphy.
Sure.
You have to deal with, but there are. The concept of thinking outside the box, though, of how are you accessing the energy is a question that needs to be asked. And don't forget that, 150 years ago, they said nobody would ever travel faster than the 31-mile-an-hour racehorse.
Exactly.
We've discovered new ways to access and create energy, and thus society progresses here in technology. So
yep.
I'm still open-minded to it, and I would encourage you to periodically check back on my website, because whenever a press release or something hits the internet, I try to post a story there. I have been criticized for posting some people that are accused of being frauds, and my only experience with frauds is they eventually end up killing themselves or shooting themselves in the foot.
Yep.
So of course you research everything, and anything that I put up as a news item on my site is not an endorsement. But somebody might have something there. So I just have to encourage you to take a look at it.
Absolutely. And we're incredibly open-minded. I mean, you know, to be pushing the envelope where we're sitting, that's a big part of what we do every day. And we're very excited by it and thrilled, you know, thrilled that you're looking into it the same way as us. And that's just great. It's very reassuring.
Well, Eon, this has been a very educational hour here on bringing both myself and my listeners up to speed on what electric cars are doing right now. Could you give out your website so people can look particularly at your products?
Sure, it's zencars.com. That's ZENNCARS.com. And there's lots and lots of information on what we're up to there.
Okay. And I should mention that he's got a very very informative introductory video posted right there on the front page. And if you forget the website, just go to my page. I've already got links over to Zen from my MG page. So again, Eon, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate your time and all the information you shared with us.
All the best. Take care.
Okay, thanks, Eon.